When the 111th Congress ends within the next few weeks, many international initiatives will be left behind. Among them are several UN conventions thought to have the support of the administration, including the elimination of all forms of discrimination against women, the rights of the child, and the law of the sea. Analyst Brett Schaefer of the Washington-based Heritage Foundation doubts it'll be taken up by the new, more conservative Congress. In the 100-member U.S. Senate, 67 votes are required to ratify a treaty, but that number has been hard to reach even with a large Democratic Party majority during the first 2 years of the Obama administration. Schaefer says it will be even harder when 6 new Republican legislators take their seats early next year in the Senate.
The prospect for the U.S. Senate to give its advice and consent necessary for ratification of those treaties was rather high under the previous makeup of the U.S. Senate, which had 60 Democrats in it, and also a number of Republicans that were moderate. Some of those moderate Republicans have been replaced, and the number of Republicans in the Senate have increased, and that really reduces the prospects for any kind of treaty ratification under the Obama administration over the next 2 years.
The best known of the proposed accords is the new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, or START, with Russia. The administration would like to have it ratified by the current Senate. According to the New York Times, if the vote were taken today, the president would need the help of at least 9 Republicans. If he waits for the new Congress to meet early next year, he will need at least 14. One treaty likely to receive little or no support is the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is currently holding its annual meeting in Cancun, Mexico. President Obama favors reducing U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by approximately 17% below 2005 levels, but an effort to introduce a so-called cap-and-trade deal to limit emissions failed to gain support in the U.S. Senate last year. And the Washington Post says nearly half of the incoming Republican legislators in the House have doubts that climate change is caused by human activity. Energy analyst Nick Loris of the Conservative Heritage Foundation says that view is reflected in the desire by some new legislators for a new direction for the House Select Committee on Energy Independence and Global Warming.
They want to get down to the root of the science behind global warming and create more of an objective platform to allow different climatologists with dissenting views to bring their opinions and bring their expertise to the table and create an honest debate and create a transparent debate rather than one that, you know, says the science is settled, which is largely what happened in the past with this committee.
Laura says many conservatives are also concerned that multilateral efforts could restrict U.S. decision-making and economic growth.
I think there is a concern, especially when it came to the climate change treaties, that some of the United States sovereignty would be lost in the fact that the U.S. government wouldn't be making decisions anymore when it came to these policies. It would be done by the United Nations framework, and I think there was a large concern that if we entered into one of these treaties where the U.S. is one of 192 countries, there's a lot of lost sovereignty into very big economic decisions that could, you know, significantly regulate the private sector.
Some say President Obama may have to settle for smaller initiatives like helping poor countries adapt to climate change or paying for measures to reduce deforestation. They say the president and Congress might agree on subsidies for reducing the pollutants in coal and for improving the development of nuclear energy, which is supported by conservatives. However, Laura says Republicans are against using taxpayer money to subsidize any technologies used to combat climate change. He says fostering free trade between nations is a better way to get needed technology to the developing world, rather than government-to-government financial support, which he says is likely to be wasted. Despite differences over multilateral treaties and conventions, observers say there may yet be common ground between the administration and the new Congress. Dan Eikenson, the Associate Director of Trade Policy Studies at the Washington-based Cato Institute, says the new Congress and the administration could compromise on trade deals with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. Bloomberg News says a pact with Seoul would create $68 billion in trade and would boost Obama's goal of creating U.S. jobs and doubling U.S. exports over the next 5 years.
Prospects for trade are much better now with the Republican Congress. And there's also another trade agreement that's been in the works, which the administration's more excited about. It's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which started as an agreement between Brunei, New Zealand, Chile, and Singapore, and now includes United States, Vietnam, Peru, and Malaysia. The reason the administration likes it is because it doesn't have to defend supporting a Bush-era trade agreement, and it gives them time to work with the Congress and figure out exactly what they want. That's sort of the next great hope in terms of trade agreements.
The House of Representatives may also be inclined to support new trade agreements, according to Sarah Jane Statz, the Director of Policy Outreach at the Center for Global Development in Washington, D.C.
I think Dave Camp is very likely to be the head of the House Ways and Means Committee and Kevin Brady, the chair of the Trade Subcommittee. And they've both been extremely good on the role of the U.S. in the world and the importance of trade to both the domestic economy as well as to global development. So I'm a little more hopeful there.
Statz also sees continued cooperation on foreign policy issues, including two administration priorities, the Global Health Initiative for Fighting Malaria, HIV, and Neglected Diseases, and the $3.5 billion initiative to boost the production of small farmers and agricultural industries in the developing world, a project called Feed the Future. Analysts say there will likely be budget cuts in some foreign assistance and humanitarian programs. However, Statz is hopeful budget pressures will also force reforms to the government's strategies for international development. That could mean the better use of trade and other policy tools to support development and changes in how and where the U.S. focuses its efforts. I'm William Eagle in Washington.